And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines in simple keywords with Adam joining us on the line. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena.
Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. It is a hump day. How am I sounding, by the way?
Oh, great, actually. Did you get a new headphones?
I did, courtesy of Arirang Radio. Thank you.
No, it's actually courtesy of our producer.
That is true, yes. I'd like to thank our producer.
Actually, you sound much better.
Yeah? Well, that's good news. That's good news. Good to hear.
All right. Now that we're all equipped and ready to go, let's jump into our keyword news portion of the day. As always, we're going to try to clarify some of these major headlines for you. This is our first pick of the day.
Nuclear power.
So more details have come out regarding North Korea's recent military parade that unfolded in the middle of the night. Leader Kim Jong-un has vowed to strengthen nuclear power as he attended the event. It's confirmed. What's the latest?
Right. So a state media photo showed Kim dressed in a white military ceremonial coat, smiling and waving from a balcony along with his wife, Lee So-ju, and other top deputies. I think it's been a while since we saw Kim Jong-un dressed in anything else apart from black. So it certainly shows the kind of significance of the event. Now, he made a defiant speech vowing to ramp up the country's nuclear arsenal. And he also threatened to use them if provoked and called for his nuclear forces to be fully prepared to go, quote, in motion at any time. So some quite ominous comments there. North Korea has always claimed the reason it has nuclear weapons is to prevent a war, but recently it started to talk about using these weapons in battle, and this was the suggestion in Kim's speech in the parade. Now, the parade also displayed banned ICBMs as well as SLBMs and hypersonic missiles as well. Among the most eye-catching pieces of weaponry on show was the Hwasong-17, which is touted by Pyongyang as one of its greatest military achievements yet. North Korea claims to have successfully tested the missile in March, with a report in state media at the time describing the launch as a powerful nuclear war deterrent. The ICBM could, at least theoretically, put the entire US mainland in range of a North Korean nuclear warhead. But analysts say there are questions over whether the missile can deliver a nuclear payload on target. It's still falling short of what North Korea is claiming anyway. Experts also say the parade offered a glimpse into Kim's ambitions for his weapons program for the future as well. They say it particularly shows his efforts to develop solid fuel missiles that would be easier to hide from foreign spy agencies because they're easier to mobilize. And these are missiles that could possibly be tested in the future as well. I mean, we saw a whole slew of weapons tests being conducted this year, and it's pretty likely, according to experts and watchers, that the North will continue with these provocations. And the show of force also shows that diplomacy between the North and the US look even more unlikely. The Biden administration, for one, has repeatedly said it is willing to resume talks without preconditions. But so far, it has shown little interest in engaging North Korea. There's still that kind of conflict of North Korea wanting those sanctions to be lifted first. The US wants the North to do away with its nuclear ambitions first as well. So it's a pretty long-standing tug of war between the two nations. So no diplomacy in sight.
No diplomacy in sight, but although it seems the U.S. and South Korea both have repeatedly put the ball in North Korea's court when it comes to coming back to the discussion table, but as you've said, it's a pretty tense tug of war, neither side willing to sort of budge with what the preconditions are. All right, let's turn our attention to our second keyword of the day.
Shared interests.
So President-elect Yoon Suk-yeol's delegation to Japan has met with Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. What came out of this meeting, from what I understand, that handwritten letter was delivered to the Prime Minister?
That's right. So it was mostly cordial. So positive remarks throughout, mostly. The PPP's Chung Jin-suk, who heads the delegation, told reporters that Kishida shared the same view on the need to seek what he called shared interests. Now, the delegation also handed, as you said, a letter from Yoon to Kishida containing wishes of better ties. The content of the letter has not really been made available to the public, but Chung said it carries a message about inheriting the spirit of the Kim-Obuchi joint declaration to build future-oriented relations while sharing a joint understanding of the past. Now, the declaration in question was made in October 1998 between then Japanese Prime Minister Kaizo Obuchi and then South Korean President Kim Dae-jung to reconfirm friendly relations between the two countries and to discuss the future for a new partnership. At that time, the Japanese Prime Minister also apologized for the historical atrocities that were committed by Japan during World War II. Chung, however, stressed the need to restore trust between the two countries as well. And he said the delegation relayed its view on the need to expand and revitalize people-to-people exchanges that were suspended due to the pandemic and other reasons. Chung said that Kishida shared that view as well. In addition, the delegation requested the Japanese government remove South Korea from the list of countries it designated to mandate COVID-19 quarantine at a designated facilities. We've seen a lot of countries that have opened their borders to South Korea, but the, ironically, the nearest to Japan is still yet slightly closed off to Korean travelers. Now, if Tokyo accepts the request, then Korean nationals inoculated with a third shot, so a booster, of COVID-19 vaccines would be exempted from the mandatory three-day quarantine. And the Prime Minister, meanwhile, also stressed that strategic cooperation between Japan and South Korea and among Japan, the US and South Korea is more necessary than ever. He told reporters he will carefully assess the discussions with the delegation and the position of Korea's new administration as well. During the talks, the two sides also touched briefly on the long simmering issues of Japan's wartime sexual slavery, as well as forced labor, but no real details of those talks out just yet.
All right, we'll have to wait and see what the details of those rather touchy subject actually covered. Let's turn our attention to the econ section. This is our third keyword of the day.
AA rating.
So global credit appraiser S&P Global Ratings has maintained its credit rating on South Korea at AA with a stable outlook, perhaps less influenced by geopolitical risks. Run us through the details.
Yeah, so it seems like these credit appraisers, including Moody's, is pretty much keeping the credit rating for South Korea the same. And it's the same case with S&P. Now, the AA rating is the third highest level on the company's table. S&P has kept South Korea's long-term sovereign credit rating at AA since August 2016, when it upgraded the rating from AA minus. In a statement, S&P said the stable outlook reflects its expectation that Korea will have stronger economic growth than most other high-income countries, in fact, over the next 3 to 5 years. It also said it does not believe geopolitical risks on the Korean peninsula will escalate to the point of hurting South Korea's economic fundamentals. It forecasts South Korea's fiscal deficit will be curtailed in 2 years, turning its fiscal balance into a surplus in 2024. S&P also maintained its 2022 growth forecast for the Korean economy at 2.5%. That's the same as the IMF's prediction, in fact. The Korean government and the Bank of Korea have slightly rosier outlooks at around 3%. The S&P also said Asia's fourth largest economy will likely register average annual real GDP per capita growth of 2.4% for the years 2022 through to 2025. It added that the country's per capita GDP will rise to $40,000 US by 2025 from the current $34,000. But it did raise concerns over the country's ever so high household debt. It said it remains very high and could constrain future growth of domestic consumption as well.
All right. We'll leave it there for now just to get to our coronavirus coverage. This is our fourth keyword of the day.
Medium risk level.
So as the Omicron wave has notably slowed down, the quarantine authorities have downgraded the national COVID-19 risk from high to medium level for the first time in 14 weeks. So what does that exactly mean, high to medium?
Right. Well, health officials noted that new COVID-19 cases, as we've been seeing, have decreased for five consecutive weeks since the third week of March, although we did see a bit of a jump yesterday into the 80,000 range. Now, the risk in the Seoul metro region also fell to medium for the first time in 14 weeks since the second week of January. The greater Seoul area maintained a very high risk level throughout last month, so it has been downgraded. However, the headquarters of the Central Disease Management said the government downgraded the level to high in the first week of April after the Omicron epidemic peaked. Now, last week, if we get a rundown of the number of confirmed cases stood at just under 618,000, with an average of just under 89,000, just over rather, 88,000 confirmed cases per day. That's down just about 41% from the previous week. Although the daily average number of confirmed cases decreased for all age groups, the proportion of confirmed cases aged 60 and older, considered the most vulnerable to infection, increased to 22.4% of the total cases. Now, the number of new deaths for the week was 1,135. That's down about 37% from the previous week, with about 94% of fatalities coming from those 60s and older. Now, the number of new severe cases also dropped to 634. That's a decrease of about 24.5% from the previous week. The infectious reproduction index, which is also another notable index, remained below one for 4 weeks at 0.7. Now, the reproduction index shows the number of people a patient can transmit the virus on average. Amid increased signs of a downturn in cases, the new Yoon government will announce its COVID response measures today. It has been largely critical of the current government's move to lift just virus restrictions overall, but especially the outdoor mask mandate, which is the one that's remaining at the moment. So we could see that being lifted later today, later than early May, rather, which was the Moon administration's plan. So we'll have to see. So even if all these virus restrictions are eased, then they could be reversed once the Yoon Sung-yeol government comes into power. But of course, we'll have to see.
Because even the health expert seems divided. I mean, it was a science-based decision, according to Moon administration, right? The risk of the disease being transmissible when we're outdoors is much lower than when we're indoors. That was a basis for the mandate lift. But as you've said, in just a few weeks' time, perhaps these changes can be reversed as well. Yep. We'll wait and see. On to some, from afar, exciting news. This is the fifth keyword of the day.
Floating airport.
I mean, the way that sounds, right? Korea plans to build the nation's first floating airport in the port city of Busan by 2035 in a move to handle growing air traffic demand in the region to deal with maybe potential noise pollution and things like that. What do we know so far of the plan?
Right, so just a little bit of background. Last year, the National Assembly approved a bill on this mega state project that's worth about 14 trillion won to build the new airport on Kadok Island. Now, it's aimed at handling, as you said, growing air traffic demand, as well as facilitating prosperity in the country's southeast region. According to the detailed plan announced by the Land Ministry yesterday, the new facility will be an offshore airport, which is to be built on a floating structure at sea. Now, the ministry says a floating offshore structure was selected after considering how noise pollution could affect nearby areas, as well as the possibility of expanding the airport in the future. Now, it plans to begin drawing a detailed construction plan within this year following an environment survey. Now, if the process goes without a hitch, the construction is expected to kick off in 2025, and the new airport will be put into operation in June of 2035. Now, a study shows that the envisioned airport would handle some 23 million passengers and 286,000 tons of cargo in 2065. Now, the airport will be classified as a national policy project as the ministry seeks to qualify for an exemption from a preliminary feasibility review to accelerate the construction. Now, the finance ministry will decide within this month whether the government can bypass the review, so in a, within this week, possibly. Domestic flights will continue to be operated at Kime Airport. Only international flights are expected to operate out of the new one. But there have been long-drawn controversies surrounding the project. They continue. Critics say the new facility is not economically feasible, and there's also some negativity surrounding the possible environmental impact in the region as well.
Are we disrupting the environment even more by creating a man-made, I suppose, an island, a floating structure of an airport? all questions that needs answering before, it seems, within this week, as you've said. All right. Thank you very much, Adam, for today's coverage. Have a safe day, and we'll speak to you again tomorrow.
You too. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.